if you think we're on the run.
Hello and welcome to episode 63 of the Dad's Army podcast. You'll be pleased to know that once again, after a brief, very, very brief holiday, well, it wasn't really a holiday for him, he had to do some recording anyway, but Oliver is back on the podcast. Hello, Ollie.
Hello, mate. How are you? In fact, it was more you were on holiday, really, weren't you? You had a little break and I did all the graft, all the editing and, you know, put it all together and you swanned off for a weekend with Tony.
Well, yes, but I like to say sitting down in front of an episode of Dad's Army and just talking through it is hard work.
Oh, yes. Especially with Tony.
he
just wanted to watch, didn't he? Who can blame him?
Well, it's been a very long time since Tony's been on the podcast, and to be fair, he's not done a commentary before.
No.
So I think the concept of sitting there talking over your favourite programme was quite a new one.
Yeah, it's sacrilege, isn't it?
Indeed. But we got some good feedback, so it sounds like that you listeners out there enjoyed A, hearing Tony again, and B, listening to the commentary on Menace from the Deep. But given that we haven't had a chance to talk about that, Oliver, did you enjoy that podcast?
I did. It was refreshing for me to to do the intro bit. I found that rather good fun. I just need to buy a decent mic. James and I we go for coffee most lunchtimes, and he was like, "Yeah, the sound quality is really poor, Oliver. You need to up your game, you know." And
I was trying to be diplomatic.
Yeah, I was rebuckled. You know, Mannering would have had me. You'd have sent me home, you know.
Won't do a tour, you know, Gronkow. But there you go. No, seriously though, what was it like talking into a microphone without being interrupted by me every 5 seconds?
It's different, actually. I thought it'd be all right, but you miss your wingman, you know. So the banter isn't there. It's tough to have banter with yourself. And James keeps me on the straight and narrow, you know. So I did a lot more cursing when James wasn't around. Yeah. All my fluffs, you know. But no, it was good fun. But now we're back, and we're in the 16th floor of James's amazing place of work with an incredible panoramic view of London. Mm. Really, really incredible. A very inspiring place to do the podcast from. We're going up in the world, really. It's quite incredible. And we've got some pretty good feedback, haven't we, just to kick off the episode.
Absolutely, yes. We're going to go through just a few emails that we've received over the last month or so. The first of which is from James Bates. This one's concerning your solo news section, Oliver, that you covered last time out.
Oh, here we go.
And James says, "I don't know who is reading out the postbag." Well, it was Oliver.
Hello, mate. I'm glad the intros are worth it.
You couldn't have said,
"Hello, this is Oliver."
Maybe you didn't say that. Who knows? We'll have to go back and have a listen. James says, "I don't know who was reading at the postbag, but someone wrote in to say an episode of Dad's Army radio show was on Radio 4 Extra. I would like to add that the BBC regularly feature the Dad's Army radio show. I remember this even in the early days of the old BBC Radio 7, so it's worth a tune into Radio 4 Extra all the time to get Dad's Army radio shows. The station also features other old classic BBC comedies like Steptoe and Son, so keep your eyes peeled on Radio 4 Extra." I think if you keep your eyes peeled on a radio station,
you're going to be in trouble. I mean, you're going to get all kinds of interference.
It's a bit like calling our listeners viewers, isn't it?
Yeah, you know.
But yeah, no, it's a good point that you make, actually, James. BBC have always repeated the Dad's Army radio plays, and you can normally find them on iPlayer as well. And yeah, it's good that they're running through the series at the moment, but quite honestly, they do that pretty much all the time. But yeah, it's worth pointing out to our listeners that you can go and find the radio shows anytime you want just by going onto the website. And just as a slight tangent, Oliver, you mentioned in the last podcast that you're looking for a title for your new documentary about Dad's Army.
Yes, it's a revamp of Dad's Army and Beyond, the Frank Williams story. So we're looking for title suggestions about a documentary about Frank Williams. Mm-hmm. What's James got to offer?
Home Guard in Action.
Home Guard in Action.
Yeah, but you've got to spell guard, G-A-R-D.
Right.
It's a kind of modern way of spelling God.
It's God. It's, I'm liking that. Here we go. You're on guard in action, bruv.
So what do you think of that?
Oh, wait, it's a bit difficult. I'm grateful for you writing in, James, to suggest that. I think we need one that's focused about on Frank. If Frank wasn't in the Home Guard, the character of the Vicar. Maybe Vicar in action. Maybe we can... I mean, we discussed this, didn't we? We threw a few out there. Like, Perfectly Frank.
Frankly Frank.
Frankly Frank, yeah. I went for... Frankie Goes to Warmington, which... Frank personally vetoed with no.
I think there were plenty of suggestions. How about, well, I'm thinking of the Vicar of Dibley, the Vicar of Warmington.
Yeah, very, very true. That's not bad, is it? The Vicar of Warmington. That could be.
There we go. That is not one that I come up with beforehand.
No.
Frank in action.
Frank in action. Yeah.
Frank naked.
Well, here we go.
Creativity is just rolling.
It is,
off the tongue,
isn't it?
Here. Yes.
So thank you, James, for your suggestion. If other people want to keep on writing in ideas, I don't know, have we got any more here?
Well, you may have. You'll have to look through the postbag.
Let's go through the postbag. Being read by Oliver, just for any future reference. Hi, James and Oliver. This is from Rich. Rich here again from Letchworth Garden City. I really look forward to the monthly podcast. It's like sitting with friends and having a good chat about Dad's Army. Keep up the good work and carry on. Well, thank you, Rich. It's the same for James and I. We meet up, we chat about Dad's Army, and, you know, it's, where would I be without him now? Life would not be the same. So thank you, I'm glad you're enjoying it. Rich continues, now then, listen up. Rock royalty Noel Gallagher gave a press conference the other day regarding his new albums and tour. When questioned about where he will be playing his first gigs, he said, Dublin, Manchester, London, Glasgow, Edinburgh, and Warmington on Sea. Just goes to show even rock stars have an affection for Dad's Army. Fallout men, we will regroup on the next podcast. That's genius. TTFN, Rich. That's fantastic. I didn't know about this.
Well, Noel Gallagher, just in case people aren't entirely certain of who he is, he's the front man, well, pretty much one of two front men of the 90s indie band called Oasis. And to be honest with you, I think most people probably would have been aware of who he is. But he's been off the scene for some years now. I suppose once you've had a couple of platinum albums or whatever, you don't need to be so prolific in your output. But yeah, certainly I'm not entirely certain whether or not I'm comforted by the fact that he's a fellow Dad's Army fan or not, to be honest.
No, I mean, you're gonna have to be careful next time they do like the 50th anniversary, like they did with Jonathan Ross Salutes Dad's Army, but they'll be getting Noel Gallagher out doing Home Guard marching. That sort of celebrity thing. From just personally, I'd have much rather, I mean, this is a tangent, but they'd have spent more time with the actual stars of Dad's Army, or even done, did you see the return of Hello Hello, where they got the cast and crew of Hello Hello who was surviving, they interviewed them, but they also got the cast, some of whom, to reenact scenes in their characters in front of a live audience. I think they missed an opportunity perhaps to do that with Dad's Army. They could have done some nice little scenes. Maybe Perry and Croft didn't want to do it, who knows, but celebrities like in Dad's Army, pretty good. As far as I'm concerned, it's nice to see the Warmington on Sea lives on. So yeah, thank you so much for that bit of feedback there, Rich. That's awesome.
Tell you what I think they should do on those kind of celebratory shows. Whilst they've still got the opportunity, something similar to what you just suggested, actually, and that's get Perry and Croft to write new little Dad's Army sketches.
Absolutely.
Now, you've got a couple of surviving characters. You've got Hodges. You've got the Vicar. You've got Mrs. Fox.
Got Pike.
You've got Pike. I forgot about him. Yeah. But, you know, I can't see how any kind of claim that it would be irreverent would actually be valid, in all honesty. I think if the writers don't want to do it, then I think that's it. But if you look at the stage plays that were performed or went round the country a couple of years or so ago now, they had new scenes in there written by Perry and Croft. So they're clearly open to the idea of writing more Dad's Army under certain circumstances. And I know Jimmy Perry in particular is still very keen on writing, and he said recently, a couple of years ago, that he's been sending in ideas to the BBC that have been knocked back for various reasons. Now, if he's got an opportunity to get some of his stuff out there now, then, you know, you'd have thought there'd be a market for it.
Maybe we can, maybe we, with Perry and Croft, can do a new audio episode of Dad's Army with the surviving cast. Maybe, you never know, maybe we can pitch it.
Or we could just do impressions of all the platoon ourselves. How about that?
We could do that. I think we could give that a go.
I think that would work. Yeah. Okay, coming up in a future edition of the Dad's Army podcast, another feature-length episode featuring just Oliver and James.
Yeah, playing all the characters, including Mrs. Fox.
Can I do Mrs. Pike?
Yeah.
All good. I like Mrs. Pike. Anyway.
Frank naked, James liking Mrs. Pike. Mm. He's taking this to a new level, this podcast.
Dad's Army is not one of those shows where you think, oh, I like that particular character for any other reason other than the performance and the lines. But I do like Mrs. Pike.
Yeah.
What's that about Mrs. Pike? Yeah, she's got this strange kind of effect on me. Anyway, let's move on.
This is Frank Williams and you're listening to the Dad's Army podcast.
Oliver, your friend Richard Gallstone.
He's back.
He's written to you again. He won't leave you alone.
Good on him.
Great commentary podcast. Menace from the Deep is one of my favourites. Good to have Tony back as well. Having James and Tony back together was like having the Beatles back together.
Well, I mean, that is, I'd like that on a T-shirt.
Yeah. I'm not so... I mean, given that...
Two of them are dead.
So I'm hope he's referring to the alive ones, but you never really know with Richard, do you?
No.
I agree about Hodges and his underpants. They are a bit revealing, almost X-rated. Fraser wolfing down his chocolate is a classic. It's exactly what I would do in the same situation. One thing that was disturbing, though, and that was Oliver telling us that he has never heard a Dad's Army radio show. I couldn't believe my ears.
Although since recording that podcast, I did actually tune in to Radio 4 Extra and listen to an episode.
Oh, which one was
it? Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that as soon as I opened my mouth and I can't remember. No, I'll tell you what it was. No, it was the showing up of Corporal Jones.
Ah, right, okay.
I think. Correct me if I'm wrong if I've said that. It's certainly got a colonel showing up. No, it's the one where the colonel turns up and they're all doing the press-ups and in the yard.
Oh, that's Room at the Bottom. Or is it?
No,
it's not. It's another one. Oh, great. Now
I think
even
it is showing up. I'm positive. It's showing up at Corporal Jones.
Where they started, there's a scene where they start doing PT.
Yeah.
At the beginning, Mrs. Pike comes in and starts going, oh, Arthur, you're ever so muscular.
Yes.
And now I think that is one of the early ones. It may be the showing up.
Yeah.
I honestly can't remember. There we go, Richard. Oliver has hopefully now redeemed himself in your eyes.
And I remembered the name of an episode.
Anyway, clearly Richard wrote this before he knew that you've come back into the fold and you no longer have to be excluded. But he said, believing you hadn't heard anything, I couldn't believe my ears. How could such a Dad's Army fan on a Dad's Army podcast have committed such an oversight? You must listen to them at once. Stick them on your iPod and then you can listen to them anywhere, even whilst you're in the pool. No, sorry, even whilst you are playing Paul. He must follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, he does. And YouTube. There's some there's some videos of me playing Paul on YouTube. And I think, now it rings a bell, actually. I mean, Richard has commented on the video.
Oh, well, there we go.
So thank you very much. If you want to see me doing some whirlwind-style shots and missing them, check out my YouTube page for me playing Paul. There we go. That's what Mr. Gallstone is referring to. And I shall listen to the Dad's Army radio plays whilst playing pool next time.
And do regular review sections of every episode on every Dad's Army podcast in the future.
And have no life.
There is some more from Richard.
Oh, yes. Oh,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a suggestion for the Frank Williams documentary as well. The Frank Vicar.
The Frank Vicar.
Okay. Okay, moving on to the next part of this podcast. We're going to be taking a look at an episode of Dad's Army. Now, Oliver and I haven't just sat down and talked about an episode of Dad's Army for what seems like a very, very long period of time. Probably because it's been about 2 years, I think.
It's been a while.
Since we sat down with Frank and talked about The Recruit. But this time around, we're going to be talking about an episode that most fans rate very, very highly.
Including me.
Including Oliver.
I've been approached by some of the women folk who want to join us in our fight against the common foe, or making the tea and the cocoa, etc.
Buttons!
Have you a problem?
Buttons! Buttons! So they can sew on buttons!
Precisely. Yes, that's a very good point, Fraser. Oh, Make a note of that, Wilson, would you?
Yes, I would.
It is...
Mum's Army.
Yay, from season 4. So, sit back, probably for about 3 hours, as we go through the virtues of Mum's Army.
I'm going to say right from a word go, and this is probably going to open up some discussion, but I think Mum's Army is the greatest episode of Dad's Army. I think it's a very well-made, well-crafted, well-acted episode. And what I like about it is that it's pretty fresh. And the first thing I noticed about it, watching it again, is that with the exception of the first gag, there are none of the sort of catchphrases that we come to know and love in Dad's Army in this episode. There's no don't panic, there's no don't like it up, and there's no we're doomed, there's no we'll put that light out. The only sort of repeated gag, and this is probably, in my opinion, the best way it's executed, is the gag of Jonesy's standing to attention and getting it wrong. The reason it works so well in this episode is because you get Mannering's great line, "I suppose there'll come a time we'll have to go." And which is classic, but also I love the sounds that Clive Dunn makes when Mannering nods his head. I just love those, and it adds something to me that makes that the funniest time. You know, forget all the other times they do it. You know, that's when it works the best. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was interesting that this episode they don't go with the normal. And there's no Hodges, there's no Vicar, there's no Verger. It's a very fresh episode, and obviously we've got a wonderful female cast, of which we'll talk about more in a moment. But I just wondered what your thoughts were, what I've just said there.
Well, it's interesting. You started with the only part that I think is actually negative about this episode, which is Jane's performance, and I'm afraid I might get more hate mail, Ollie, but once again I think Jones is at his most irritating in this particular episode, not least because of the opening gag. I mean, I don't actually find the mistimed drill unfunny. I just think I think it's possibly overused somewhat, but you know, slight variation on it I can live with, but it's just that Jones, again, is such a million miles away from the serious character that he was in the preceding episode, which was 2.5 Feathers. Very Jones-centric episode, one of my favourites, and Corporal Jones there is a very, very well-rounded, well-defined character with a good story. And he descends back into, well, comedic slapstick mush in Mum's Army. So yeah, I would say I do love this episode, but you did focus on the one element that irritates me.
Mainly because it's the only gag that's familiar with the series as a whole. That's why I sort of like the fact that they have a gag that we all know, and they do it in the opening scene, and the rest of it's all fresh, it's all new. And there's some very, very well-crafted gags that we'll talk about in more detail.
No, absolutely. I do think it's well-written. And I do think the climax of the running gag there with Jones, comes a time when it'll have to go, as you mentioned, I do think that is very good. And it's also the most honest the writers are about Jones, because clearly he couldn't sustain a responsible role within a platoon. But yeah, you mentioned that there are no other regulars, well, the guest regulars, the semi-regulars, if you like, the vicar, the warden, the verger, and so on. But that's notwithstanding the fact that this episode has got a huge guest cast.
Absolutely, very much so. And I think we've got 5 or 6 different women characters.
I think there may be a few more, but certainly if you look at the second scene, if you like, this is where Mannering is interviewing, or not interviewing, that's the wrong word, he's meeting each of these ladies in turn, and of course the last one being Carmen Silvera's Mrs. Grey, then I think it slowly builds the tension, you know, because you think this is just going to be very funny. It starts off, I think the reference Fraser makes is that they, you know, it's a great idea to have women in the platoon because they can make tea and sew on buttons. So this episode is not a great advert for women's lib, but possibly may well have reflected you know, the period in which the episode is set in. Perhaps that was the attitude towards women, that, you know, domestics were their responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, it's, it, you know, but that's a sort of, yeah, characteristic, you know, from a personal point of view, I don't agree with. But, it, yeah, absolutely, we're talking about the time this was set in.
Can you sew on buttons?
Can I? No. I'll give it a go.
I'll get my mum to do it.
Yeah.
But anyway, go on.
But equally, my dad could probably sew on buttons as well, you see.
Oh, no, my dad could sew on buttons. It just wouldn't be in the right place.
Mm.
Yeah, or the right colour.
No.
Anyway, sorry, we're slightly digressing.
But the good thing about having the women in there, it gives us a different dimension for a lot of characters. I mean, Fraser's probably in his most hyper in this episode, you know, talking about big, strong thighs. Walker's at his most cheekiest.
He gets sent home.
Yeah, he gets sent home. Which
why wasn't that Pike?
Yeah, that's it. Well, you know, Pikey, you know, he was pretty much on his best behaviour, really, in this episode. So it gets great having... This is a new dynamic, and, I mean, let's face it, it's... probably Arthur Lowe's finest hour, in my opinion, his performance in this, pairing with Carmen Silvera, an amazing performance from her. Absolutely nothing like Madame Edith in Hello, Hello, for those of you who are familiar with her in that. A great comedy performance in that series, but here, such a beautiful performance. It works on so many levels. I think it's absolutely, and the dynamic between the pair of them is unforgettable, and it has a level of pathos. And a level of drama, like when she says about careless talk, you know, talking about the location of the guns, whatever it is.
That's right, in Regent's Park.
Yeah, I mean, it's got levels that it works not just as... This isn't, to me, an example of whatever people think about Dad's Army, people who perhaps don't like it, they think it's just silly men prattling about. This is the obvious episode to show them, because it works on a very personal level. And you get the best reactions out of your characters, I think. I think Wilson's on marvellous form doing his Jack Buchanan bit. And the writing of this episode works, because that whole setup of what a pretty name, and Wilson doing all the charming, to then lead quite unexpectedly, you don't expect... Mannering to then start doing that. That's why it's so, and it's because it's so out of character. You don't expect that, and that's why it's so fresh. These aren't the same gags that we come to get in every episode.
No, but we've said on several occasions the main success of Dad's Army, at least for us, is the dynamic between Wilson and Mannering. Now, Mrs. Gray adds something to that. Right, for two different reasons. To talk about the mimicking, if you like, of the Jack Buchanan stance that Wilson has with the ladies, it actually shows that the Mannering does respect Wilson.
Yes, yes.
Right? And it does. I mean, Wilson would never know that, but basically he's just copying Wilson. And he's not going to do that in his position at the bank, because he's the bank manager. And he certainly wouldn't want Wilson to know. And Wilson, of course, doesn't know. And it's subconscious, because you see Mannering check himself, or certainly that's the way Arthur Lowe plays it anyway, when he realises that he's using Wilson's lines. So there is an admiration for Wilson there that probably never was articulated until Wilson lost his bank in a Wilson manager.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's one thing. The other thing was that, of course, Mrs. Gray manages to draw out a completely different side of Mannering that we have never seen before, and we see perhaps briefly again in My Brother and I afterwards.
Yeah.
Because clearly that's his family. But you get, you know, I mean, Mrs. Gray, she kind of pushes all the right buttons. I mean,
oh, yes.
She gets into the flattery side of things about the...
taking his glasses off.
Well, that's the point of no return for Mannering. Yeah. That is it. The minute he says yes to taking the glasses off, that's it. And that's why it's reused again and again after that particular scene. But that's when he falls for her.
Yeah, because I think it was a very good point you make there, because up until that moment, I mean, I like the fact, because he's a decent man and he doesn't really see the... He doesn't see the... any flirtation there. He talks about Mrs. Mannering, you know, my wife and her dahlias and stuff. But you're absolutely right. As soon as those glasses are off,
that's it.
Hooked. It's there.
Yeah.
And what they then do, and I think it's from that scene, because I think she comes in. Mrs. Gray comes in. I timed it at 9 minutes into the episode. For the remaining 20, this whirlwind of character development. To happen in 20 minutes.
It's phenomenal.
It is brilliant.
Because you care. You actually care about Mrs. Gray. I actually think Mrs. Gray is a bit of a... I'm trying to think of the right way of putting this, but she's disruptive to Menarin's world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, he doesn't care. Pike has to come in and tell him of Amerigo Tirans that the bank inspectors are there and that he should hurry up. Can you imagine Menarin not knowing that and being there like a half an hour earlier? Or, you know, in another episode, we tell him we have Wilson and Pike there doing all this and that. You know, he doesn't care.
But don't you think that's irresponsible on Mrs. Gray's part? Because she's knowingly trying to chat this guy up, refocusing his attention from A, the bank, and B, the war, onto her. And then, to top it all, this woman leaves.
Yeah.
Once she's got him, once Menarin's world is focused on her completely, and she knows he's married,
yes,
this woman is actually, I think, not a particularly pleasant person, and certainly not a considerate person, and she's dressed up in nice, respectable exterior. And Menarin falls for it, hook, line, and sinker. She's a manipulative woman, this woman.
Oh,
this girl. What do you think of that?
No, I think she, the moment she realises that it can't continue, she has to leave. I think she's just being Mrs. Gray. I don't think she's thinking, I'm going to have the bank manager.
Oh, I think she is.
No, do you?
Well, you got the flattery instantly. You know, I love what you're doing with the platoon. Oh, you're always punctual.
But then,
you know, we watch you from... She's leering out of her window watching this guy on his way to work. She's a stalker.
No, I don't see Mrs. Gray like that, but maybe that's for romantic in me. I mean,
Should be called Miss Scarlet.
I'd love to meet as a Mrs. Gray when I'm Captain Mannering's age, you know, and thinking, hey, you know, here we go. you know, I think she's a breath of fresh air of a show, that's for sure.
Oh, well, I don't disagree with that, certainly.
And I think... No, because, I mean, let's face it, that the Hodges' niece in the last series taking Pike out in the car, that's a manipulative woman.
Oh,
that,
yes.
That's
yes.
You know, the difference between that character and Mrs. Gray. I mean, it's
huge. You're talking about someone who kicks puppies as opposed to someone who... I still think she was irresponsible.
But, all right, answer me this. Do you wish she'd gone off with her?
Oh...
You know, how much do you like Mrs. Gray in comparison to Mrs. Menarin?
No. Well, yes, I know. And I think it does actually highlight in a non-comedic way that Menarin is extremely unhappy in his marriage. And it's always been alluded to in the past, but it's been done in the comic way. Or my wife, or no one will speak to her, that kind of thing. Whereas this time, it's actually... He doesn't care. He doesn't care what people say.
Yeah.
And Menarin is a very proud and pompous man. And I think this is... One time, his head was completely turned.
Oh, yeah.
And I do feel for him. And I think you think of the amount of stigma and the amount of gossip. There's one very good scene, and I always enjoyed a platoon having a good old gossip in the...
Oh, yes, yes.
..in the Churchill. And, of course, Fraser is...
He's stirring.
But they do care about Menarin. And this is another point about Wilson. Fraser actually suggests that someone ought to have a woman.
And he clocks it in the background and thinks, yeah, that's my job.
Does. Well, not only that, but Wilson actually starts moving before Fraser makes that suggestion. So I think Wilson was on his way and going to do it anyway. It's not bad timing by John Lemesurier.
Yeah.
I think that was scripted. It was like, as Fraser starts talking, Wilson moves into the office. The reason being is because Wilson actually quite likes Menarin.
Mm.
Now, despite the fact Menarin gets the wrong end of the stick, but he gets the wrong end of the tree, frankly.
I think he does that on purpose.
Oh, possibly.
I reckon...
Maybe I haven't given Menarin enough credit there.
Well, I reckon from his reaction, he knows. I see some of us making tiny little fools of ourselves. But I think he's too proud to make Wilson think that he knows that he's talking about him and Mrs. Gray. Otherwise, why disband the platoon just because people are worried about how Mrs. Pike thinks?
Well, because the women sent that platoon mad. Yeah. I mean, you sent Fraser into, you know, a 16-year-old's gone crazy about thighs. He's got a bit of an interesting obsession with thighs, I think. Mm. You've got all of the... You've got
Walker, some, you know, going about putting her hands down the knickers and all
absolutely
kind of stuff.
Brings out
the
his
worst
baldy side. Absolutely. Yes. He finds it hilarious.
Yeah.
Pike is just there. I mean, Pike is probably the only one who hasn't really been massively affected. He brings along this woman who seems to be incapable of speech. And she turns up again, you know, in all
Oh, she does in
My British Buddy.
Yeah,
but I'm not entirely certain it's that funny.
Oh no, I think it's funny just because of the payoff of answering the telephone. Do you think, sir? I think that's the only reason Soundwave works is for that one line. I think that works a treat. I think the one character who doesn't come out of this episode very well is poor old Godfrey. And I counted, he gets 5 lines in the entire episode. And he doesn't speak until 16 minutes into the show. He doesn't have a line.
Wow.
So he has one line there, and he has 3 lines in Marigold Tea Rooms. He has one line when he's saying, I don't think Captain Mannering would be running off with Mrs. Gray. So it's not a very good episode for Godfrey. You know, they didn't really have him bringing either of his sisters in. Maybe they thought there was too much crammed into the episode.
I think that's possible. Well, it's got to be the reason as to why the vicar, the verger, and the warden were there, because there was simply no dialogue. It's actually quite a long episode as well. I think it's over 30 minutes, which is unusual for Dad's Army. But yeah, I think you're right. It hadn't crossed my mind until you've mentioned that. You mentioned briefly that it was the Marigold Tea Rooms. It wasn't, actually.
Was it called something else?
It was Anne's Pantry. And the whole point was that they usually go to the Marigold Tea Rooms. And Mannering knew Mrs. Gray went to a different one. And that's why you got the gag, oh, I come in here from time to time. You know, because he doesn't normally go in, you see. And it is referred to as Anne's Pantry. The reason why you say Marigold Tea Rooms is because it's almost an identical scene.
And an identical set.
Scene and set, yes. Yeah. To the scene where he has tea with Mrs. Fox.
Yeah, yeah.
Where she offers him Tuesdays and Thursdays or something.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And again, I can't actually remember what episode that is. But it's so resonant, and the way it's shot, the way it's directed, where the actors and actresses are sitting, it's virtually identical. But it's not the Marigold Tea Rooms.
Oh, I see. Slap my wrist. But that's a good. It's a very good scene. Mainly, and I wanted to ask you. It's just reminding me because I know you're not a massive fan of slapstick. But I think Arthur Lowe's walking into the walls and things is gold dust. I think he does it so well.
Funny you mentioned that. There's 2 pieces of slapstick that stick in my mind, one of which I find much funnier than the other, which is where Mannering falls off his chair just after he misses his chair when he goes to sit down after he takes his glasses off. But the one you mentioned I thought was okay, and the reason why I wanted to mention that is because that was at one point my wife Angela, and some of the listeners will remember that she has actually been on a previous episode or two of the Dad's Army podcast. She looked at me because she had absolutely no idea why I was laughing. She just thought it was incredibly unfunny.
Ah.
So I thought it was mildly entertaining. And because I've seen it so many times, it's hard to gauge whether I actually find it funny. Whereas when Mannering misses the chair, I always smile at that. It's a bit like watching Del Boy fall through the bar. Just can't watch it without laughing. But yeah, did you find that particularly?
Absolutely, and it's a double layered gag because while people are laughing at the fact he's walked into the door or hat stand, then Mrs. Gray's got to pay for the 2 teas, and Mannering said, "No, have these on me."
Yes,
8 pence, please. You know, so it works twice. You get her reaction, and the bit I think that's where as well. You know, you talked about Mrs. Gray. You know, suddenly just. You know, going away. But I think it's when Walker says, I haven't seen you either, you know what I mean? You cut to a reaction shot of Mrs. Gray. They want you to see how she clocks that and reacts. You know, Mannering doesn't care, but that's the first moment where she probably thinks, hang on a minute, this is disruptive.
Yeah.
And that's where the episode then takes, that's when the gear shifts, because then we're just talking, we hear that they've been going off to different places, we never see that, so time has elapsed.
Well, it's the last time that we see them together.
Until the station,
absolutely, and that's only because he runs after her. And that leads us nicely into the closing scene, really.
And it's funny you've mentioned that, because you always think of this episode, and you think about that great sort of relationship, but they only, other than Mrs. Gray attending the platoon drilling, so they're only really in 4 scenes together. It just goes to show what a fantastic amount they crammed into half an hour to develop this relationship. And this final scene is echoes of Brief Encounter, which is just a classic British movie. And I love the fact that Mannering, as soon as he realizes Mrs. Gray isn't there, is your Mrs. Gray going to the station? Down tools. Take the parade.
Yeah, he didn't
he's
care.
Gone. He's gone. Went. I love that. It's, that's passion. That's a man who's like, I'm going to go and try and make this work. And it's that whole, it's that little gut-wrenching thing. I think it's a fantastic performance from Lowe. He lays it all out, you know, take the damn chair or damn a bloody bank, you know. It's like, ooh, you know, it's a bit shocking. But it's like, the man, he probably feels more alive there than since we've seen him in the very first episode talking about, come on, Jerry, we're ready for you sort of thing. That's probably his most alive we've seen him, his most passionate. And that's what love does to him. That's why, I think it's just great drama as well as comedy. And I think, yes, everyone remembers Don't Tell Him Pike and The Deadly Attachment. But this episode for me is just genius. I'm pretty sure Arthur Lowe won a BAFTA for Captain Mannering. He was nominated 4 times. But I know that 1 year he won. It wouldn't surprise me if it was for this year, in particular this performance.
I wonder.
Worth looking up. But
it was good. It's the combination of two things. One, the audience already know the characters, so there's no preamble in introducing the characters. And the writers don't always take advantage of that. They often go back to default gags. And as you pointed out earlier, they don't do that here. They use the characters and tell the story through them. And secondly, the writing is so strong in order to develop those characters in such so few lines.
Yeah, they don't waste any lines.
No, not at all. And it's something that modern day television has to do, and it does it very, very well. Usually does it very, very well. The successful dramas, I mean, if you have something, and I think there are lots and lots of comedies on BBC at the moment that, quite frankly, aren't funny. And the reason being is because you're not invested in the characters at all.
No.
They could do considerably worse than take a look back at something like Dad's Army and see how Perry and Croft made you care about these characters almost in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, whereas you can watch an entire series, for me, of My Family, I couldn't care less about any of the characters.
No, absolutely, you know?
And it's not because I'm not paying attention. It's because they're just not written well enough.
No, they don't feel real. Yep. This feels real. And another thing with this episode I particularly like, I mean, that train station set looks great. I mean, you know, you've got the train carriage. I think they've gone, you know, you've got all the, you know, passengers on the train that you see for a few seconds. It's not done half-heartedly, this episode. They've gone for it.
Oh, you're right. And the detail is there. On the train, there's just as it's pulling out of the set. Because that's another thing to note. It's studio-bound.
That's
this
right.
Episode completely.
So it's just all done with the camera movement.
Absolutely, yeah. But there's a station master or someone shouts out, pull the blind down.
Yeah.
And that's because it was a night train.
Yeah.
You need blackout on the train.
Yeah.
You know, small little detail like that that will be lost on most casual viewers.
Yeah.
It's there. And this episode, it's just, you know, the war is layered through it, and it's not purely for comedy. And I think it's unique. It's got some similarities with a few brief scenes in My Brother and I, but aside from that, then I think this is probably the most affecting episode of Dad's Army that there is. And, you know, I always have difficulty saying, this is my favourite, this is my favourite. If it wasn't for the Jones thing that really irritates me all the way through, then I would have said this is probably the strongest episode.
Oh, absolutely! I think it's very well crafted. The gags work on layers. You'll get a gag, and then 5 minutes later, you get a payoff for that gag, and it comes full circle. And that happens a few times in this episode. It moves on at a great pace. There's no padding. The opening scene. I know you don't like the Jones stuff, but it's all done in like 2 minutes. Doesn't waste time. And whilst it's happening, Mannering's doing all the exposition. So whilst Jones is prattling about doing the drill stuff, he's explaining about, I've been asked to get some of our women folk. He's telling the plot in that opening, doesn't mess about, and it's straight in, boom, action. I think all the performances are fantastic. I think it's the most film-like of all the Dad's Army episodes as well. It feels like a movie, I suppose, because of the brief encounter sort of style. But I think it feels big. I just think it's a very, very strong piece of not just Dad's Army, but of television, quite frankly. I think it's you know, it just works. And it's something I can watch over and over again, that episode. It's a classic. And, I'd go down on record to say I think it's the best Dad's Army episode.
Cool. I think these two episodes, this episode and the previous episode, The Two and a Half Feathers, are the two strongest episodes that appear concurrently in Dad's Army. There aren't two episodes, in my view, that have been done so well that were transmitted one after the other. You always had a slightly weak episode afterwards, or one that wasn't that special after a really monumental or memorable episode. So for me, yeah, certainly, I'd still give this 5 out of 5, but you know, I give lots of others 5 out of 5 as well. How about you? Given that we've always rated episodes that we've discussed in the past out of 5, we may as well continue.
Oh, it's got to be 6. No, 6. Yeah, 5 out of 5, absolutely. It's I'd say it's a perfect episode of Dad's Army. I don't think you can say much more than that. And I think it's only fair that we listen to Mannering and Mrs. Gray's goodbye from the end of the episode.
I'll cry.
Me too.
What's this? What's happened?
Nothing's happened. I'm just going back to London, that's all.
For how long?
I don't know. A month or two. Perhaps for good.
But you never mentioned it. You never even hinted at it.
I just thought it would be for the best.
But I don't want you to go. The whole pattern of my life has changed. I just live from one meeting to the next.
I know. And I'm just the same, but it's the only thing to do. People are talking.
People always talk. Who cares about them?
But there's your wife.
Nobody will talk to her. I haven't had a vow since Munich.
Be sensible, George. You can't afford scandal and tittle-tattle.
I tell you, I don't care.
But there's the bank.
Damn the bloody bank.
George.
I'm sorry. Don't get that train.
George, I must.
I implore you, don't get that train. Look, we'll meet once a week.
George, you're making this very difficult for me, but I've made up my mind. It's the only way.
Victoria!
There's my train.
Look, Fiona, I've never begged anything from anybody in my life, but I'm begging you not to go.
Finish with this chair, sir.
Yes, take that damn thing.
I only ask.
I'm sorry, George.
That's it for right. Another episode for of Dad's Army. What are we doing next month, Oliver?
We're gonna go through the mailbag.
Pull yourself together. Get it.
Yeah, sorry. Come on. Please do send in your feedback and your thoughts about what we've discussed in Mum's Army. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Mum's Army. Do you agree? Is it the greatest episode of Dad's Army ever? Or you know, other things you dislike? Did you think Mrs. Gray is manipulating? Let us know what you think. Email to the usual addresses, james@dadsarmypodcast.com or oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/dadsarmypodcast or twitter.com/olivercrocker. And also we're going to be covering a few things. We're going to be looking, as promised previously, we're going to be looking at behind the scenes of the Dad's Army documentary about Frank that's coming up. Keep your titles coming on in. What else are we going to be looking at next episode?
Frank Stripped. How about that? Oh, am I developing a theme here?
Yeah, dangerous theme.
Frank Laid Bare.
On that bombshell from Mr. Rockcliffe, I'm going to sign off. Thank you for the pleasure of your company. And take care. Enjoy yourself.
Bye for now.
See ya.
But he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun. So who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler? If you think old England's done.
There will come a time when he'll have to go.
Yeah.